Hello, and welcome to another NABBW teleseminar on a topic of importance to Boomer women and their families. Tonight we're talking about tying up all our financial loose ends as the year ends. Our goal is to help Boomer women and their families get wise about all of these details. My name is Ann Holmes. I'm your moderator and the Boomer-in-Chief of the National Association of Baby Boomer Women, an organization dedicated to educating and empowering women at midlife. This call, like those we do every month, is one of the ways we serve our membership. Tonight our guest is Pamela J. Sams, CRPC, Chartered Retirement Planning Counselor, and NABBW's Retirement Planning Associate. And as I said, we'll be discussing ending the year financially. Pamela is a frequent guest and always covers important information related to money and financial planning. And we feel that this is really important because, first of all, Pam has spent over a dozen years helping women and their families improve their personal and financial wealth via solid financial planning. And as president of her own firm, Jackson Sams Financial Services, a financial planning and wealth management firm located in Herndon, Virginia, near the Dulles Corridor, as she focuses on helping women understand the importance of financial and retirement planning by placing their needs first, she realizes, and I've come to understand through getting to know Pam, that women, especially Boomer women, I think, just haven't made it our passion, made it a top priority to become smart about our finances. And this is something that we really need to do. So that's why Pam and I do these calls at least once a month on a financial topic. So tonight's call, I think, is very timely, ending the year financially. And Pam is the perfect person to tell us about it. I need to tell you a little bit more about her credentials. She's a graduate of the University of Missouri Columbia, holds an MBA in financial management from Everett University, and has earned several client service and financial planning awards. She earned her CRPC, as I mentioned before, that's Chartered Retirement Planning Counselor Certification, through the College of Financial Planning. And in the past, we've talked about long-term care and, as I said, how couples are retirement challenged because they don't take time to sit down and really talk about their retirement goals and dreams. We've discussed how boomers aren't doing a good enough job of planning the financial strategies they need to put in place to make retirement possible. And tonight's topic, wrapping up the year financially, is just as important of a topic. So clearly, I think the first thing that we should do, Pam, is let you say hello, and then let's get right into it.
Okay, great. Well, hello, everybody. Happy holidays. It's hard to believe we're here at another end of the year. I don't know where 2013 went. I was just speaking with a group of women earlier today, and we all said the same thing. It's like you blink, and then all of a sudden, here we are at the end of the year talking about ending the year financially, just like we did towards the beginning of January of 2013, talking about how to begin the year financially. So here we are. I guess it all comes to a close as we have been doing these month to month, as really going over a variety of different topics. But there are some things that we need to address. I know this is a busy time of the year for a lot of people with Christmas shopping and holiday events. To really delve into doing some of the things that you need to do to end the year financially so you're not in a crunch for January. So that's what we're going to talk about today.
Absolutely. It's very important. And I agree that with all of the holiday to-do, all the hustle and bustle and all the, I forgot to get a present for that person and all of that kind of thing, sometimes it's easy to forget about the financial things, and yet if we don't take care of the finances, there's nothing else going to be there to take care of. So I don't want to sound morbid about that or anything. I just want to make sure that we find time in this busy time at the end of the year to realize that there are things that we need to be doing that have to do with, as you said, ending this year and getting things set up for the coming year, 2014. And I agree with you. When I was a kid, you know, it seemed like a year took forever, and I would think that the school year even was, you know, I couldn't wait for summer vacation, but I would think the school year was never going to end. And like you now, Pam, I think 2013 feels like it just started. But
yeah, exactly.
You've told me that there are a number of things that have to be on our to-do list And I want to talk about to-dos first and then talk about some other considerations. Let's start with the first to-do that you've mentioned to me is rebalance our portfolio.
Exactly. And that's a lot of things that people really don't realize. I do a investment planning course at a local college and university in the area. And, you know, I joke about that with people. I said, okay, after you put up the ornaments and you put up your Christmas tree and you've done all of that, the next thing you need to do is rebalance your portfolio. And a lot of people are like, what? Yeah, you do need to also make sure you do that. You know, the stock market has been on fire, you know, really much, pretty much of this year. So likely, you know, most of the portfolios are probably overweighted or overly allocated to certain asset classes or equity, so to speak. And if you haven't rebalanced lately, it's really a good time to take a look at doing that. Now, it might be tempting to let things run and, you know, let these gains just kind of run into the next year, but, you know, that those gains may also result in a riskier portfolio than you intended. So it's a really good time to do that. I know when I, you know, went to start in the year earlier, when we talked about January, it was taking a look at your portfolio, and then it's the same thing at the end of the year. You want to make sure anything that ran up in terms of asset classes in your portfolio is rebalanced back to its original allocation. And then really be smart about it, you know, using some tax-deferred accounts such as IRAs, 401Ks to their best advantage. Also, donating any appreciated investments to charity may help, you know, rebalance portfolios as well. But really using the money to allocate to those asset classes that may have not done well this year, and I know it's counterintuitive for a lot of people, is that, you know, why can't I just kind of continue to let these things run up? But going back to its original allocation to fund those asset classes in your portfolio that may not be or at least under-allocated portions of your portfolio to really reduce the risk overall. So really in the beginning of the year, take a look at it, make sure it's set, and then as we go through the year and the markets continue to fluctuate up and down and things like that, your portfolio may be a little out of balance. So December is usually a good time to take a look at your portfolio and then make sure it's rebalanced back to its original allocation. It's really important to do that. You don't want to continue to have a more riskier portfolio moving into a new year. You want to make sure it's properly allocated.
Excellent. And I think that we should take a moment here to talk about, you know, professional assistance with doing this, Pam, because I think that sometimes as much as we might have someone in our family that has a hobby of working with a portfolio, I think that I'd like to have you say a little bit about the importance of someone beyond a family member working on this.
Yeah, a lot of times, especially during this time of the year, you know, you get around family and friends and, you know, the conversation always turns to most of the time money or, you know, what's going on with the stock market or, you know, what am I doing, what are you doing type thing. And a lot of times, you know, we get advice from people who are, you know, just kind of novice or, you know, have their opinions about it. But it's really important to have a professional if you're not comfortable with doing that, your portfolio management on your own, really having a professional take a look at it, especially at the beginning of the year and, of course, at the end of the year, as we're talking about rebalancing, to make sure, you know, those asset classes are still okay for your portfolio, but then also make sure they're not overweighted and getting, you know, professional advice around that. It's good to, you know, kind of get some hints and some tips on certain things you want to take a look at. But really running that by your financial advisor or your professional money manager, if you have one, to really make sure you do the thorough research and analysis for you before you make any moves there.
All right. Excellent. Now, what would be the next thing that you would say must be on our to-do list?
Well, the next thing, if there's anyone out there that is over 70 and a half, is to take the RMD, which is the required minimum distribution. And like I said, a lot of times, you know, especially you're busy throughout this busy time of the season, is that you may have not known that you need to or have not taken your R&D for this year. So the way that it works, if you're over 70 and a half or older, you are required to take a minimum distribution from IRAs or other retirement accounts. If you are a beneficiary of an inherited IRA, you may also be required to take a required minimum distribution this year as well, if the deceased individual was taking RMDs at the time. So it is really important to take that distribution by December 31st, by the end of the year. Otherwise, the IRS comes and hits you with a very stiff penalty of 50% of the amount that you did not take, on top of the income taxes that you have to pay on the distribution. So you don't want to be into a situation where you did not take your RMD by December 31st. So if you turn 70 and a half this year, you can delay that first distribution to April 1st of the next year, so you have until April 1st of 2014. But that means that you will need to take two distributions next year, corresponding with this tax liability. So one in April 1st if you've turned it 70 and a half this year, and then you still need to take another one next year, December 31st as well. So there are some things that you need to do with R&D and making sure you get the correct calculation done that takes all of your retirement accounts into effect. So you take that total. It's an actuarial calculation, so make sure you visit the IRS website to see or discuss it with your custodian, whoever holds your financial accounts, to make sure they calculate what distribution you need to take out, because you want to make sure you take out the proper amount and not be subject to those penalties as well. But that's one of those to-dos that a lot of people miss. And I've run into, you know, several situations where, you know, we're trying to write the IRS and say, hey, you know, I didn't know, or, you know, I guess ignorance is bliss, so to speak, and really try to get a reprieve on that. And sometimes they will, sometimes they don't, but you don't want to get caught into that situation. So if anybody's in that 70 and a half category, now is the time to really, I know a lot of custodians, I got deadlines today on, I think, December, because of the holiday coming up, December 23rd is when you should try to put it in for processing so you can get it out by the 31st, you won't get that penalty. So that's another to-do that a lot of people may or may not be aware of.
All right, because the 23rd is not too far away. I'm not even
sure.
Might be less than a week until then. I'm not going to do the math on that. I'll just say that it's very soon, especially with the holiday days in there.
I think it's Monday. Like I said, a lot of them. You have to, you know, check on your particular custodian to make sure, because they may be doing something after, you know, Christmas. But most of them like to allow a little bit of time so they can process the paperwork and things. You don't want to have a big old pile of the request in there, and then they have to fumble through and get it done. So they want to make sure it's proper time so they can get that done as well. But, yeah, that's a very, very heavy penalty. So make sure you take your RMDs by December 31st.
Good to remind us of that, Pam. Thank you. Another thing I know that you would like to have us include in our to-do list is our retirement plan contributions. So let's talk about that one next.
Yeah, in terms of your retirement plan contributions, if you are not on track to do so already, make sure you consider changing salary deferrals of your last paycheck of the year to allow, you know, to increase the amount to your 401k for 2013. The limits for 2013 are $17,500 and then $23,000 if you're over 50. Or older, so you can put in a little bit more. So if you are maxing your retirement plans, make sure, you know, you're going to have everything in by that last paycheck of the year. So if you need to act quickly, make sure you contact your company's payroll department or the plan's website to change your deferral amount. You know, I think next week is probably the last week for most people's payroll checks to make any changes. But also, you know, remember that, you know, you can change the amount back in time for your first paycheck in 2014 if you need to make any adjustments as well. So really looking at maximizing those retirement plan contributions prior to that last paycheck is a good time to do that. Also, it's really the time of the year to look at the company's 401k investment menu, because a lot of times companies add new investment options after open enrollment, which is generally October, November, December timeframe for a lot of companies. Mm-hmm. And they could be replacing some funds with new choices, and then you have the old funds, and then they don't really tell you. They just kind of allocate it to the new stuff, and then you don't know. So make sure you know during that open enrollment process and your employee benefits is a good time to review to make sure that they haven't made any changes or updates to the investment choices that are actually in your 401k as well. So really looking at maximizing your retirement plan contributions and also double-checking what's going on with investment menus if there's been any changes. In addition, if there are any self-employed people, solo 401ks for self-employment income, the deadline to do that is December 31st. You have until April 15th of next year to fund it, to make contributions, but you do have to have it open by December 31st if you haven't mm-hmm. done it. So self-employed people, if they want to do a solo 401k, you know, that's the best way to really kind of self-employ people to save for retirement. Same contributions, what you can do is contribute up to $17,500, $23,000 if you're over 50. Plus, you can do an extra 20% of your net self-employment income, up to a maximum of $51,000 for 2013. But you do have to make sure you have that plan open and in place by the 31st of December, but you have until April 15th to actually fund it. So, you know, look at self-employed people also, you know, if you need to do any equipment purchases or other expenses. Over the next few weeks, it's really good part to do as a deduction for 2013 as well. I'll talk a little bit mm-hmm. about, you know, maximizing deductions. But since I was talking about self-employed people, try to get all of those, you know, expenses in before the end of the year so you can expense those out for on your 2013 taxes. But in terms of the actual retirement plan, make sure it is set up, but you have some time to actually fund the account. But December 31st is the deadline to establish the account and open it for self-employed income.
Very good to remember that. I know there's, as a self-employed person, I know there are so many things that for us just take, you know, we wait till the end of the year because, well, several of our clients tend to make financial decisions that involve them paying us toward the end of the year. So the fourth mm-hmm. quarter is always the time when we really have to be alert to income inflow that, you know, hasn't been going on all the other months will suddenly appear and mm-hmm. at the same time it's very important to make sure that we're using some of that for funding retirement plans and those sorts of things. So very
exactly.
important to discuss that here. Another thing that I think goes along with that, and I'm sure you would agree and have a lot to say about it, is our flexible spending or healthcare spending accounts. So those are things that we really need to take a look at what kind of funds might be left in them. Is that not correct?
Exactly. And until recently, many people had to deplete their, you know, for flexible savings accounts by December 31st, or you lose whatever money was left in it. There has been, you know, some changes with the IRS rules with FSAs. Some employers allow you to do a carryover of $500 of your FSAs to the next year, but you definitely want to double check with your employer and make sure they have that that grace period, so you have up until March 15th to actually use or incur those particular expenses. But this is a good time to double check with your employer to make sure that you don't have to do all of those that spending for the flexible spending account, which is basically daycare or things like that, or healthcare spending, which would be you know, more medical expenses, that you would have to do it by December 31st. You know, that means mm-hmm. you know you'll be frantic trying to spend a race to spend the money, you know, going to the eye doctor, going to the dentist, all those before the end of the year. To make sure you don't lose those dollars that are in there. So now is, at the end of the year, is a good time to see if you're in that program that you do need to do those things by December 31st. So I guess after Christmas, people will be scheduling, you know, eye appointments and dentist mm-hmm. appointments and things like that if they need to do that. But if you do have that grace period until March 15th,
thanks to, you know, some of those IRS change rules, then you have a little bit more time to do that. But there, like I said, there are still a few employers that do require you to use the money by December 31st or use it. So you definitely want to make sure you're in a situation that you know, so you don't, you know, January 1st comes and you go, hey, I could have done something differently, and I didn't take a look at this before, and I thought, you know, a lot of people assume or think certain things. Make sure you definitely know that your employer is one of those plans that allow you to get that grace period up until March 15th for expenses and not December 31st. So it's a good time to take a look at that. So, you know, if you are in that situation, so now is a good time to, you know, order the contact lenses, visit the eye doctor, the dentist, do all of those things and pay for those eligible medical expenses. To revisit, because a lot of times people dump money into these healthcare and flexible spending accounts. They'll be reimbursed throughout the year, but never really kind of look back at wrapping it up for the year to make sure you have, you know, what you still have left in there, what do you still have to do in order to use all of the monies that are in there in the account, and then plan accordingly on what things you need to get done in terms of the medical expenses.
All right. Now, one more thing that I think we have to look at as a to-do before the end of the year has to do with whether we might be, in my case, I've already said I'm a self-employed person, or if we're a employed person but our employer doesn't pay our health insurance, we need to be dealing with healthcare.gov pretty soon here. I think we might have till something like next Monday again on the 23rd to get set up on that. Is that correct?
That's correct. They have extended you have to make an election by December 23rd if you're going to be on the health care exchange for health care. I believe they gave a grace period for the first premium due, which would, I believe, now is somewhere later part of January, not towards the beginning, you know, because of the situation with the website.
Yes, the website has made a lot of excitement for those of us.
Yeah, that has been quite the adventure. But yeah, as long as you make that election by December 23rd, you still have some time for that first premium to do. But yes, if you are self-employed or if you want to look at making changes to the health care, this is a good time to make sure you make those elections on for the health care exchange by the 23rd as well. So, you know, right before the Christmas holiday, make sure you get health insurance in place. So that's another thing like that. I'm glad you did bring that up, because that is one of the requirements for the health care exchanges, to get that done prior to the end of the year.
Right. All right. Is there anything else that needs to be on our to-do list, or should we move on to talking about other considerations?
I'll probably move on to other considerations. If I think of something to do, those are generally the biggies that most people really have to kind of put on, I need to get these done. But some of the other ones we'll talk about in terms of considerations are really, you know, I guess guidelines. You probably want to do them, but, you know, a lot of times it's either or. It depends on each person's situation. But, you know, those are some other considerations before year-end as well.
Okay. All right. Then maybe the first thing on our consideration list, I think you might say it would be looking at our IRAs and rollovers.
Yeah, I mean, in this area, what I'm looking at is really once a year, you can withdraw tax-free all or a portion of assets from one IRA, traditional IRA, and then put it into another IRA, and you have that 60-day window to do that. And you can only do that once in a year. So, you know, looking at doing that prior to end of 2013, if you wanted to do that, that's, you know, the time frame you want to do that. Now, you cannot roll funds from IRA 1 to IRA 2 over 60 days, and then IRA 2 to IRA 3 over the next 60 days and so on. It's really just a kind of a one-time, one traditional IRA to another traditional IRA within a 60-day, what they call the 60-day rollover provision. To do that. And, you know, eligible rollover provisions from employer-sponsored retirement plans are not subject to that one-year provision. These are IRAs that you have outside. But a lot of times if people want to do the IRA rollover within that 60-day window without, you know, any additional penalties and pay and put it back, then you have that. You can do that once per year. So if you want to do that before 2013, you need to do that prior to the December 31st. So those are some things to consider with your IRAs and rollovers.
Right.
And a lot of people may be in a position to do it, and they may not. It's just something that you may want to consider if you want to, if that's a move, a strategic move that you want to do this year.
Mm-hmm. All right. Now, what about reviewing our beneficiaries?
Reviewing beneficiaries, I think I had that on my to-do list on the beginning of January, and it's always good to do at the beginning of the year and the end of the year. And what I mean there, as you're reviewing, you know, when you're in there reviewing your investments anyway, you want to make sure that your designated beneficiary, that you have a designated beneficiary for each account. A lot happens in a year. You know, a lot of people mm-hmm. go through divorce, they may have had children, you know, they either got remarried, whatever the case may be. And a lot of times people don't revisit these beneficiaries. So it's really, you know, just as important as writing a will to really check your beneficiaries on a consistent basis. I always say at least towards the beginning of the year and towards the end of the year. And it's, like I said, especially important if you have life changes such as birth, death, marital statuses. A lot of times people keep running with what I see a lot of times is people don't change because you never really go to HR anymore. You have to, you know, call or go on online or whatever. Is that mm-hmm. I see a lot of beneficiaries, non-beneficiary changes with retirement accounts to 401ks. People just kind of let it roll and, you know, really don't revisit it. Until it may be too late. But one important, you know, point to keep in mind is that retirement accounts pass directly to named beneficiaries rather than becoming a part of your estate. You know, that can provide significant tax advantages, you know, for your heirs. So you want to make sure mm-hmm. it's done right. If you are married, keep in mind that most employer-sponsored retirement plans automatically designate a spouse as your beneficiary unless you name another beneficiary and then your spouse has to consent in writing. So, mm-hmm. you know, if you have been through, you know, a divorce, you know, you have to, you know, unfortunately have a marriage decree given divorce decree given to your employer-sponsored plan so they know that the spouse is coming off. And you don't have to keep getting a consent in writing from a person who's not even there anymore. So you want to make
right.
sure, you know, things are taken care of in that instance. But they are automatically designated as spouse. And that's why I said a lot of times people have a rude awakening that, you know, if they're going through divorce, it's just so many, you know, things to consider and think about. A lot of times people don't change their beneficiary on their 401ks, and then it's their former spouse, and then you know what happens after that. So really making sure you review your beneficiaries on a consistent basis, at least at the beginning of the year, and then if there's life-changing events throughout the year, births, deaths, marital status, you know, just life changes there, make sure you look at where things are at the end of the year. So the beginning and the end of the year, you want to make sure you review your beneficiary statuses.
All right. What about our tax deductions?
Tax deductions are very, very interesting. You know, I'm not a tax accountant, so I can just give you a limited amount of what I know in terms of financial planning with that. But one way is what you want to do in terms of maximizing your tax deduction. You know, what you had mentioned before, being a self-employed person, December is usually one of those times where I need to get, you know, everything done so I can make sure I can deduct it on my business expenses or whatever. So
mm-hmm.
it's the same way with most people, you know, to maximize the value of your tax deductions. It's really to look at, you know, certain things that you can be doing in December versus waiting for the new year. So if you typically deduct state and local sales taxes from your rather than income taxes, you may want to put that into December versus paying them in January in order
mm-hmm.
to get that that tax deduction now. If you're going to be considering big purchases, you know, like cars or things like that to increase this year's tax deduction, you want to get those done by the end of the year as well. Now, another interesting one that I recently found as I was preparing for this call, is that a lot of people, the mortgage interest tax deduction. So if you want to prepay, let's say, make your payment before your interest payment, your mortgage interest payment before the January payment's actually due. Do you want to do that before the calendar flips to January, because you're going to get a little bit extra mortgage interest deducted, because the mm-hmm. mortgage company will put that in as 2013 mortgage interest paid. So you can kind of, you know, prepay that up front and get a little bit boost of interest, mortgage interest tax deduction for that year as well. If you have kids in school, a lot of us get those tuition bills, and sometimes mm-hmm. we wait until January. If you can, you may want to consider paying a little bit of next semester's tuition in December, to get maximized tax deduction. So if you have the resources, you want to consider paying next semester's tuition in December to maximize your tax deductions there. So there's, you know, really some things there. Of course, you know, charitable giving is one of those. Every year, I try to plan accordingly, but every year I'm sitting at the Salvation Army on December 31st, mm-hmm. putting in charity so I can get the receipt, and I'm in the line with everybody else. And a lot of times people, you know, wait until the last minute to do that for charities, but that's another way to really increase your itemized deductions for 2013. So really looking at ways that you can do that.
That's a good point to bring out about that, Pam, because I have to confess that there were many years when I just took stuff to Goodwill, threw it in the receptacle, you know, and didn't take any account of the fact that there was a benefit for the fact that I was making that donation. And,
mm-hmm.
and so I'm hoping that I am the only one that forgets that donation, but I suspect that I wasn't the only person that forgets that.
No, I think a lot of people, you know, just like you said, if you're just kind of doing some spring cleaning or just kind of cleaning out your closet, and you put everything in the car and you just kind of dump it into the nearest receptacle at Goodwill or Salvation Army, a lot of times you don't even remember that's what you did. But mm-hmm. when tax time comes and then you're sitting there with your tax accountant, they're like, you know, did you give anything to charity? You'll say, yeah. And then you don't have any receipts or anything. They'll ask you, you know, how many bags or whatever, and they can estimate, you know, based on how many bags you took or how many boxes that you took to charity, how much you can get it in terms of a tax deduction. So those are really important pieces to look at maximizing, especially if you're in a position for 2013 where you've made more money than you may have thought, which is a good thing. I'm not debating that. It's really how do I maximize my tax deductions to bring down my income so I don't have to, you know, pay too much in taxes.
Mm-hmm. All right. What's next on your list?
Next on my list is those year-end bonuses or gifts. Hopefully mm-hmm. people are still getting those. Some employers still give their employees these year-end bonuses. And a lot of times, of course, like everybody, it's human nature, will get the bonus, and then the next thing you know, they're out buying extra Christmas gifts and things like that. What I'm telling people is really to bank any in-year bonuses or gifts. Think of it as a windfall, an unexpected windfall that you get, that you could basically apply towards investing for future goals instead of really kind of spending. So that's the whole thing. So mm-hmm. if you think there's a chance that you'll get a year-end bonus or a financial gift, you really need to decide to, you know, now to save the money and use it towards either, like I said, paying off debt, investing for future goals instead of spending. So post-holiday bill paying season, you know, you'll be glad that you that you did that versus, you know, spending it on extra gifts and things like that. So some possible ways to use the money, like I said, pay off credit card debt, personal loans, any outstanding taxes, anything that you need to do that, or depositing into a college savings account, additional 401k savings, or your IRA, perhaps opening up a money market fund, CDs to invest for the future. So really capturing and banking those year-end bonuses versus now mm-hmm. I have extra cash and I can go out and buy extra stuff.
Right.
And a lot of times people do, you know, just that. And that's why, you know, as well with a lot of my clients, year-end bonuses, but also raises come into effect So really trying to capture those before you get into the habit of spending the extra money. You know, you've been used to living off a certain amount of money so far, you get an extra bump. The most intuitive thing for people to do is, oh, now I have extra cash, I can spend more stuff, more money on more stuff.
Mm-hmm.
It's really to try to capture that and bank it for future goals.
Well, I think that's really important because over the past few years I've noticed that television commercials that come on toward the end of the fourth quarter, where I think businesses are that sell things like appliances or even buying a house or something, I think that there are those type of businesses where they're realizing that people might have some kind of a windfall at the end of the year, so they start putting these pitches on the TV about, oh, you know, take your bonus and buy yourself this fabulous brand new TV or something. And I know that that's always tempting because it's kind of like it's free money, but
uh-huh.
but really what you're talking about is a much smarter way to handle such a windfall.
Exactly. And you know, like you said, you'll get those commercials during this time of the year. It also happens during tax refund season as well. People
mm-hmm.
get big refunds from taxes. That's pretty much an unexpected windfall for a lot of people, and we are enticed to buy an extra stock that we see on TV. It's really to, once you know it's coming, really decide what you're going to do so you don't be tempted to spend it on things that come up. So if you make a decision that I know I'm going to get this financial gift, I'm going to get this bonus, really I'm going to, pay down this bill or this particular debt, or I'm going to, and then save some for, retirement or down payment for house or new car, whatever you want to do. So really looking at how are you going to manage it before it even comes in. Because once it comes
mm-hmm.
in, when you don't have a game plan, you're automatically probably going to be in the I'm going to spend it situation. So have a
mm-hmm.
game plan before you even get it on what you're going to do with the gifts that you have. And preferably
mm-hmm.
you'll deposit it into something that will grow for future gains, for future goals for you.
All right. Well, the next item on your list is one that I'm not familiar with, so I probably
mm-hmm.
should be, but that's tax loss and tax gain harvesting. I'd like to hear what
yeah.
you have to tell us about that.
Well, a lot of times is that we keep, a lot of times people have individual stocks or bonds or, things in their portfolio, and they'll continue to say, oh, okay, this thing went down, or, oh, this thing went up through the year. Tax loss harvesting and gains is basically looking at if you wish to, especially if you're in a more of a higher income tax bracket, you had some dogs or something in your portfolio you wanted to get rid of, if you sell those off before the end of the year, take the loss. You can offset those loss as a tax deduction off of your tax return up to $3,000. So looking at doing that prior to the year end, selling any investments such as stocks, bonds, or mutual funds that have lost value will reduce your tax liabilities on the capital gains that you have realized from any winning investments. So it's kind of a rebalancing, so to speak, but in terms of capital gains. You're going to get rid of some dogs, you're going to keep some gains, and it'll offset each other if you take those losses prior to year end. So at the end of the year, harvesting losses could be, attractive strategy for, like I said, a lot of high income investors, especially because there's going to be there were three tax increases that took effect for 2013. The highest tax rate on long-term capital gains increased to 20% from 15%, so that was one. We had a 3.8% Medicare surtax for high-income taxpayers that pushed the effective long-term gains rate up to 23.8%, and then that top tax bracket is now 39.6% for ordinary income. So, depending on where you are with your income tax bracket, you may want to take a look at what your portfolio did, where there's some losses, some gains. Can I effectively reduce my tax liability by selling some of these things off, harvesting some of the tax loss in order to reduce my overall tax liability? And
mm-hmm.
those are things that you need to do, of course, prior to December 31st in order to take effect for your 2013 tax return. So looking at usually towards November, December, mutual fund companies will send out, you know, what the distributions were in your portfolio. Your mutual fund. If you bought it at a certain amount, but now it's worth this amount and you want to take that loss this year, you need to do that prior to December 31st. So it's all about, you know, strategies and how to reduce the overall tax liability by harvesting certain investments in your portfolio through tax loss and tax gains.
Mm-hmm. All right. Okay, I realize that now that Steve and I have done that, I just didn't know the term of harvesting. I like that term.
Yeah.
I'll remember that. So.
Yeah, it's like a reaping and sowing. You know, you
right.
put it out there and you're going to go out and harvest, you know. So that's the term. Like you said, you've probably been doing it all throughout the years and that, but the term is tax loss harvesting or tax gain harvesting. That's basically what you're doing towards the end of the year, you know, seeing what dogs I can get rid of and what gains I can do to offset from a tax perspective. But most people should be doing this type of planning throughout the year. So when you get towards the end of the year, say, okay, these are, you know, some of the things, strategies that I will implement. So you can just basically either tell your financial advisor or your, you know, money manager or do-it-yourself, whichever one, that you know what strategy you're going to use in order to take advantage of some of those tax loss harvests for the tax return for the next year.
All right. Well, another thing that I know is important to be considering before the end of the year, and that is charitable contributions. So let's talk about that one next.
Yep. So, you know, we talked a little bit about this before, but really giving money to charity before year end is really another great way to boost your deductions if you itemize. So you can deduct all kinds of charitable contributions, cash, stock, non-cash donations, you know, such as what we talked about with those clothes or things like that. This year I was fortunate, unfortunate, but I had a car that it was paid off, and I hate to have to go get another car note, but it died on me, or wasn't running properly, so I decided to donate that one to veterans, Purple Heart for veterans. So, you know, things like that. If you have cars that you want and you don't know if you want to fix it up or if you want to just junk it or donate it or whatever, that would be a good donation. It's a good donation to get it off the tax return. They will, most of those organizations give you the full Blue Book value on those things. So if you want to consider doing that, that's good. Some giving strategies can, you know, really stretch the tax benefits even further. Highly appreciated stock. A lot of times people have stock in their portfolio. They want to, you know, sell some off. You can donate highly appreciated stock if you plan on selling it, and you can give the stock to charity instead of cash. So that's a good way to do that as well. You will get the deduction for the full amount, and you avoid paying capital gains taxes on the increase in value since you've owned it. So a lot of people donate highly appreciated stock to charity. So some of the charity charitable contributions that people do. So, of course, cash, stock, non-cash donations. And all of that needs to be done, of course, by December 31st to make sure you get credit for those contributions on your tax return. So this is a good time of year to start looking at ways to reduce your tax liability. Charitable contributions is definitely one of those to do.
All right. Well, in a similar vein but not quite the same would be gifting. Let's talk a little bit about gifting next.
Yeah, gifting, a lot of people, you know, are kind of bypass the gifting, but for 2013, you can give up to $14,000 to each to an individual as you wish and pay no gift tax. That's the whole thing is that how do I give money to, you know, a lot of parents or grandparents, how do I give money to grandkids or children? You can do up to $14,000 for 2013 with no gift tax. Spouses can split gifts for a total of $28,000 per beneficiary per year. So, you know, if you have, you know, husband and wife, they can do up to $28,000. So gifts beyond that gifts beyond the 28 or 14 is taxable, but only to the extent that it exceeds that lifetime gift tax exemption. This year it was, you know, $5.25 million over a donor's lifetime. But the good thing is that the recipient of the gift owes no gift tax or income tax and doesn't even have to report the gift unless it comes from somewhere outside the United States. But gifting is one of those if you decide to use that strategy, you want to get it done by the end of the year if you're going to gift money to individuals or people in your family and get some of that money out of your estate if you want to do that and gift it to children or grandchildren or things like that. So gifting is another strategy to, you know, reduce your tax liability and not pay that that gift tax.
All right. Now, as I understand it, with gifting, the recipient of the gift also doesn't have to pay tax. Is that correct?
Correct. Yep, that's
so
right.
So both sides can benefit from gifting, which is something that I think not enough people realize.
And that's the thing is that's the strange, I wouldn't say strange, but as a lot of times people aren't familiar with the gifting rules and the gifting strategies. Maybe it's one of those strategies people just aren't aware of or they don't take full advantage of. Because like you said, both people win in that situation. And if you have money that you want to gift to the next generation without having in your estate and you want to get it out of your estate, you can basically gift each year. So if you want, let's say you had $100,000, you know, each year you want to do 28, 28, and 28, and you can do that, you know, with no gift tax, and they don't have to pay an income tax or gift tax. So it's a good way to gift money on an annual basis if you want to get certain money out of your estate. So that's one of those things that you do need to do by the end of the year in order to take advantage. I'm not sure if they're going to be changing the limits on what they'll do for 2014, but as of 2013, it's up to $14,000 and then $28,000 as a total if you're a couple. You know, if you wanted to get $14,000 and then your husband wanted to get $14,000, basically that beneficiary would receive $28,000 for that year.
Yes, I have a friend whose parents do that for him. They each give him a gift, and I was going, well, I've been benefited of you know, many gifts from my parents, but I've never had each of my parents give me a gift. So I was thinking, wow, that's a power policy I wasn't aware of.
It is, and if people are in a good position to do it, it's a really good way to take advantage of, like I said, gifting money out of your estate if you don't need it. And so really, a lot of times people just kind of think about that individual 14 each, and then they don't know about that kind of split gift situation. You're an individual put them together, and you have that combined amount, and you can do it a little bit faster if you wanted to get more out in order to do that. But gifting is one of those strategies that I think is underused by a lot of people, but it's one of those things you want to consider before year end if you are going to do that.
All right. Well, there's a couple more things I want to talk about, and I want to be mindful of our time here, too. So the next one I want to make sure we discuss is stock options.
Yeah, and, I'm just going to cover this briefly. Some people still have stock options. Some people may not. But if you consider at the end of the year, you want to consider reviewing your employee stock options prior to year end to really determine whether you can exercise them in the year, if you have grants that you have got throughout the year when they're due, if you want to exercise any stock options throughout the year. Exercising most employee stock options will result in an ordinary income tax. So, it could be advantageous if you expect to be in a higher tax bracket for 2014 because you may end up, getting it lower for this year. So it's one of those things at the end of each year you want to review where you are with your stock options, how many grants you have outstanding, when you want to exercise those, if you're going to exercise those by the end of the year, how it's going to be treated in terms of capital gains, how it's going to affect your overall tax situation for this year versus doing it next year. So it's one of those evaluations if you do have stock options that you want to do on an annual basis. Of course, throughout the year, but year end, is anything that we talked about here, end of the year financially, if you need to make an exercise by the year end, you make sure, you want to make sure you get that done. And then evaluate your options a little bit earlier because, you know, exercising stock options and doing things like that is a little more complex. So you may want to start doing some strategies with that. I would probably say, you know, September, October time frame if you want to start doing that towards the end of the year to make sure it's evaluated because things fluctuate throughout the year. But make sure you get it done by the year end if you do decide to do it.
Excellent. Well, I know you had one more thing on your list of considerations before year end, and that was get a jump start on your New Year's resolutions. And I realize that we all make all kinds of New Year's resolutions, but one that I think should go in there is to either write or review your will. Probably not the kind of resolutions we always think about, but something that I think that needs to be done annually, and I think making a New Year's resolution about it hopefully would get people to do it.
Yeah, I mean, and that's one of those, you know, I think wills and estate planning, you know, I've been doing quite a few client reviews, I guess, over the last couple of months. And that's generally on my agenda, the last item that I discuss with people, and that's generally the last item that's always on their list of things that they have not got done this year. So I always put it at the top of next year's list. So every time that I meet with them, I'm like, okay, last year we ended it. We still didn't get this done. This year is the top of priority in terms of your New Year's resolutions or financial goals for this year. Yeah, so you do want to make sure you review your estate plan. I wouldn't say that, you know, it depends on, you know, what your situation is. You want to take a look at it annually. You may not want to make, you know, any particular changes depending on it, but you want to make sure you review. Of course, as your overall financial plan, you make sure you touch base with that. But in terms of getting a jump start with your New Year's resolutions, you know, why wait until January 1st, you know, really to think about the changes you want to make in the new year? You know, really commit to improving financial health next year and get a jump start on realizing those goals by identifying one thing that you can begin doing today to improve personal financial life. You know, a lot of times people are like, oh, I'm going to not be in so much debt next year, or, you know, I'm going to plan to, you know, set aside more savings, or I'm actually going to do my budget this year. So really just identifying one thing that you can do to today to begin to improve your financial life. You know, not sure where to start, you know, just one topic, one particular thing about money that you're really not comfortable with right now, or something that you know you should be doing, but you just haven't got around to doing it, you know, that now is really kind of a good time to, you know, put some things in place. And, you know, it seems as though as soon as the calendar turns, you know, on January 1st, everybody's with this New Year's resolution, I got to get my finances in order, I got to lose weight, I got to do all these things. You know, it's good right after, you know, some of the stress of, I guess, the holiday and the busyness after, you know, Christmas and, you know, New Year's is not as exciting, I guess. But, you know, when you have some downtime and some vacation time, hopefully people get some vacation time during this time of year, it's really to kind of jumpstart your New Year's resolution list. And a lot of it should be improving personal financial life, should be at the top of most people's to-do list for next year. But putting one particular topic or one thing that you can be doing right now in order to move yourself forward for that particular goal would be a good thing to do at the end of each year is, you know, get a jump start on it. I'm going to, you know, focus on this. I can do this right now, and it'll keep that habit going into the new year.
Is there anything that you would say with regard to, you know, obviously you can't speak of specific people that are your clients, but is there anything that you would say overall as you think of your clients, is there anything that they mostly fail to do that you know, the thing that you would say is the biggest thing that people need to address with regard to this year-end stuff?
Well, I think a lot of it is really keeping on task towards the end of the year. You know, people are really good up until a certain point, and then towards the end of the year, I would say November, December, things get a little out of whack in terms of, you know, I'm over budget, or You know, I'm not focusing so much on the savings, you know, because, you know, the holidays come and you're, you know, doing more spending, that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
So they feel a little guilty that they've kind of gotten off track on some of these things. And then January comes around and we're, you know, kind of wrapping things up or I guess putting things back together that may have gone awry with that. But overall, you know, most people are really focused on, you know, improving personal life, getting their financial house in order. But like I said, a lot of the things that loose ends that I see people doing are, you know, really kind of forgetting to do some of the reviewing the beneficiaries or, you know, making sure you have that will in place. You know, especially for, you know, we deal with a lot of boomer women. I also have some younger clients in my practice as well. They don't want to deal with that particular piece because it's, you know, you're dealing with your mortality. So they don't like to deal with, you know, estate planning mm-hmm. so much and looking at the will and thinking about the life insurances and things like that. So, you know, some people shy away from those things. But in terms of boomers, it's all about focusing on how do I improve financial life towards retirement, making sure I'm maximizing my retirement accounts. You know, things like that. So they're pretty much in line with wrapping up some of the year financially and the things they need to do.
Mm-hmm. Well, I know that quite often at the end of our calls, and we've pretty much come to the end of our calls, I sometimes ask you kind of an off-the-wall question that's occurred to me. So I've got another one of those for you.
Okay.
It seems like in the past week or so, I've been hearing some discussion on TV, I think probably on the Today Show or something, but it could have been on Dr. Oz, but somebody was talking about the potential that human beings could start living a lot longer than we're living, you know, living like 100 years, or I even heard 500 years, which I can't possibly imagine that I would want to live 500 years. But what I'm curious
yes.
about is what does this additional longevity potential, what does that mean for those of us who've made our projections with the expectation that you know, maybe we're going to live till 80 or 90 or something, but
mm-hmm.
what do you advise people about that?
Well, it's definitely, you know, quite a challenge. I think right now, you know, and I've heard, you know, statistically some things like that as well. I think I read, it may have been, the journal, either Nature or Science magazine. So let's say a child born today, now, their life expectancy is probably somewhere at about 130. So a child born now. So they have that longevity issue there. I think most people in the boomer category were probably still on the time track of, you know, I do most planning between 95 and 100.
Mm-hmm.
And look at resources from there. But yeah, as generations start to increase in terms of longevity, like I said, if a child is born now in 2013 or let's say even 2014, their life
mm-hmm.
expectancy is 130 years, then that is going to be quite a challenge in terms of making sure you have enough resources because,
mm-hmm.
you know, I think the name of the game is, you know, I think most people have not come to the realization that retirement probably needs to be pushed up. You know, I think
mm-hmm.
most of it is, you know, most people are looking at age 70 now in terms of really looking at the retirement number. That's why Social Security maximizes retirement resources at age 70. If people can wait to age 70 to take their resources from Social Security, that's a bonus for them. So I think as generations go longer with their longevity, I think the retirement age is going to be pushed up as
okay.
well, because then we still need to plan for probably a, you know, 25 to 30-year retirement. I think the retirement is just going to be a little bit longer down the road in terms of when people are retiring in order to really make sure they don't run out of money, because, you know, if we have their normal retirement age of 65, if people are living to, you know, 130 or 135, I don't think the numbers are going to add up too well.
No,
you know,
it seems to me there would be a problem.
Yeah, I think that would be a problem. But I think most people, you know, as we go along, you know, it'll probably be more commonplace that people will be living longer but also working longer.
All right. That's the end of my questions. Is there anything else that you've thought of as we've been having this discussion that you'd like to make sure that we get into the discussion here tonight?
No, I think that's everything. That was the main key points that I wanted to emphasize with people, is making sure, of course, you know, during this busy time of the year, you know, the last thing that people have on their mind is, I guess, financial planning.
Mm-hmm.
So it's all about, you know, the happy times and things like that, and spending with family. But really, these are some things to address and get done before year end. You know, if it's not done properly and you go back and then January 1st happens and there's things that you could have done towards the end of the year, I think a lot of times people regret those situations. So it's really good, of course. I always emphasize doing proper financial planning at the beginning of the year as your New Year's resolution, but also as you wrap up the year, end of the year, you have to look at your financial plan again. So those two, I guess, endpoints, bookends, so to speak, one in January, one in December, and, you know, to make sure everything is running properly and smoothly.
Excellent. Well, I want to thank you, Pam, for this wonderful discussion here at the it'll be the last call that we do this year. So
yes.
Thank you for our December call and for all of the wonderful information that you've imparted with us over the course of the year, and we look forward to further discussions with you in 2014. But I just want to take this time here at the end of the year to thank you for all of
mm-hmm.
your efforts so far. And I want to make sure that anyone who's been listening to us this evening or who listens to the recording of this call, because I will be publicizing the link to this for the rest of the month, because I think the information that we're covering here is so important that I want to give everybody as many chances as they can to hear it, especially because so many of those dates you said were December 23rd, which is, you know, just right around the corner.
Yeah, just right around the corner. I think people need to act fast.
Right. So I want to let them know that they can email you. Is that, I know you're going to be busy because you were working with your
mm-hmm.
clients now, but it's still possible that they could email you if they had any questions. Is that correct?
That's correct. Yes, that is correct. I'm always available.
Okay, and that would be at Pamela@JacksonSams.com. And then I want to say a little bit about NABBW, too. If anyone listening would like to know more about the NABBW, you can find us online at our website at www.nabbw.com. Be sure to check out our Facebook page, facebook.com/NABBW, because I try to make sure that we get content up onto that every day. And then, of course, we have a forum at boomerwomenspeak.com. So, again, Pam, I want to thank you for your time here this evening, and I want to thank everyone for listening. And I hope that everybody listening will consider the points that you've made, because they're also important, and take some action. Give up a little eggnog and a little bit of – don't worry about the fanciness of the packages that you're wrapping, you know. Get some time to deal with these really important things too.
Yeah, think about the importance of it. Like I said, a lot of times things are, you know, focused about you know, the spending and not so much the other piece of that. It's really how do I stay sound financially. So that's also a big piece as we go into a new year, is really making sure you wrap it up tight in a nice bow. Let's say, you know, let's use that analogy, wrap everything up in a tight bow financially.
All right. I like that you were able to take my wrapping paper idea and apply it to what we need to be doing here with our finances. Thanks very much, Pam, and I'm going to say goodnight to everyone here now.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Bye-bye.